Hi, I'm Will Hamilton, and this is 90.7 The Capstone.
So we had a request for One Night in Bangkok by Murray Head, which is also one of my favorite 80s songs, and I really thought I had played it on the show before, but apparently it is no longer in the system. So I apologize for that, and I'm going to get to work to make sure that we can play it next week on Crimson 80s. But thank you for your request, and I'll make sure I follow through on that. Coming up next from 1984, we have The Boys of Summer by Don Henley, followed by U2's I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For.
Hey, what's up? This is Ham Bagby, and you're listening to WVUA 90.7, The Capstone.
I
That almost wraps it up for this edition of Crimson 80s. We're going to wrap it up with Alice Cooper's Poison. And thank you again for listening to Crimson 80s and 90.7 FM The Capstone. Coming up next, we have Brain Matters, so please stay tuned. It's going to be another great show.
University of Alabama, WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa. This is how you make yourself vanish.
Red Mountain Entertainment presents Jason Isbell live at the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater with guest performances by Sergio Simpson and Brandy Clark.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on the show are not meant to replace professional health care and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's straight up 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7 The Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. In case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, in particular UA students, of course. You can listen to us live each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. Tonight we'll be taking questions, as usual, via email, so if you have them, please send them to me at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. I'll be giving that address out every so often during the break, so you can send us questions if you have them. And also, I always like to ask for upcoming topics for the spring semester. If you have something that you want us to talk about or possibly give more information on, please email those ideas to me. I've already gotten a couple of ideas for shows for the spring, and we're going to try to make those happen. Let me remind you, this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions. But like I said before, you can email your questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Let's get right into the show. This is our sixth show. We're probably in the middle right now. We probably will have six more shows before the end of the semester. But I always like to have a couple of shows during the semester that deal with, or I don't even know if the right word's deal, but that talk about how there's an alternative way to treat certain mental illnesses or certain mental health issues. Because I think people, a lot of times at the counseling center, students will come in and they do not want to go the traditional route. They don't want to go the medication route for depression or anxiety. They want to try alternative strategies or try something as what we practice at the counseling center, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. It's simply what it sounds like, cognitive behavioral therapy. So tonight, our show, we're going to do the first segment featuring music therapy here at UA. I really want to talk about how music therapy can affect healing and be instrumental in treating some mental illnesses and especially some mental health issues. Our second segment of the show, we're going to talk about art therapy. So it will be similar to the first segment, but it's a different medium. And they're both very interesting. I've done some research like I always do for my shows. And it's just fascinating to me the actual chemical reactions that these mediums can cause that I think are probably as beneficial as some medications. I'm sure there's some research to back that up, too. My first guest tonight is Dr. Ellery Draper. I love your name. Ellery Draper. She is assistant professor for the music therapy program here at UA, and we've been talking a lot before the show actually started. I felt like we needed to record most of what we were saying.
We did.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
So,
how'd you get interested in music therapy?
So I actually swam competitively growing up, which sounds like a strange,
has nothing to do
with music therapy, but I started teaching swim lessons like most competitive swimmers do, and I started working with children with disabilities in my swim lessons. My mom was a special education teacher before she retired, and I started to see these kids who were not getting swim lessons because other teenagers weren't sure what to do with these children with disabilities, and my mom sort of convinced me to take these children on. So in beginning swim lessons, I did a lot of singing. So Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star to practice, laying on our back, the Ring Around the Rosie to get ready to put our head in the water. I sang Blowing Bubbles songs, and I was starting to notice how the children were reacting to music. Yeah. And at that point, I was really involved in music. In addition to swimming, I was doing piano lessons. I was involved in choir at school, and I was thinking about a career in music education. And I thought, gosh, I really want to do music, but with these particular children. And so I started pursuing music education degrees and programs, and then also looking at programs specific to children with disabilities.
What kind of disability, at the time when you were teaching swimming, what kind of disabilities were common in the children you were working with?
I had a lot of children with autism. I had some children with Down syndrome. I had children with sort of unidentified disabilities at that point, the pervasive developmental disorder that unidentified.
Asperger's, autism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with children, some with attention deficit disorder, some children who just socially weren't quite aware yet, some children who were just really scared and not sure what to do and not interacting appropriately, mm-hmm. shy. Mm-hmm. But the majority of kids that I worked with disabilities had autism. So that's what really started me in.
So, okay, let me ask you, music therapy, when did these programs start becoming recognized as an actual major in colleges? And how many programs are, I mean, you might not know the answer, but you can kind of guesstimate, I guess, how many music therapy programs are there across the nation? Is this a common program, or is it unusual to have a program like this on a campus?
Well, there are about 75 undergraduate training programs in the country right now, but we are the only program in the state of Alabama at this time. And there aren't programs in some of our surrounding states, mm-hmm. So it sort of is unique to this area. Mm-hmm. There are, we started sort of getting recognition as a profession after World War II when veterans were returning from war, and we were seeing music volunteers in the hospitals. And people started to notice reaction from patients, from veterans in the hospital to music volunteers. And that was sort of when we figured out, hey, let's start studying this in a more scientific way. And it was shortly thereafter we started seeing programs develop.
Tell us, I want you to give the definition of what music therapy is, because when we were talking before the show started, you know, I asked you, I said, I think, are there people who are skeptical about music therapy? Because, and that's why it's so important to do research, to, you know, read about music therapy in the peer-reviewed articles, to understand that there is a reaction that can change the way a person feels, that the way they think, that can alter their mood state even.
Mm-hmm. So the definition that we have from the American Music Therapy Association is that music therapy is the clinical evidence-based practice of using music to address need areas in cognition, physical, across domains, motor, speech, communication, language, and also general wellness, and sometimes even developing music skills as a leisure skill or as a coping skill. So again, we're using music to address non-musical skills and goals.
What about for a music therapist, what kind of jobs are out there available to somebody who wants to major in that?
There are quite a few jobs out right now. There are jobs in hospitals, schools, jobs. We have actually a lot of folks going out and starting private practices where they are actually working with a number of facilities in their community to sort of piece together, if you will, a full-time job. So some people will say, hey, you know, I'm not sure that I want to work only in a nursing home or only in a school system. I want to do a little bit of everyone. I want a variety. And so we're starting to see students of ours go out and seek out contracts in their communities with a variety of agencies.
What about, you know, you and I were talking before the show, this is not an easy program.
No, it's not.
And my first question to you was, do you have to play an instrument in order to be able to major in music therapy?
And the answer is yes. So here at the University of Alabama, we require students go through the audition process to be admitted to the School of Music. And so that includes being trained on an instrument at a level That is very high. The University of Alabama, we have a wonderful school of music that is competitive and has a very good reputation nationwide. And our students are required to come in at a high performance level. So we have students who come in playing a variety of instruments. We have students in our program whose primary instrument, that's what we call it over in the School of Music, is their primary instrument. We have students who play piano. We have students who are vocalists. We have students who play tuba, harp, violin,
and
viola.
Those are all loud. Right?
Yes, and those
not
are all
the banjo,
allowed.
Though, because I asked about that since I used to play.
But guitar, we do have students who play classical guitar who come into our program, but we are starting to see, for a long time, we were seeing students only from voice and piano backgrounds, and now we're starting to see our program has grown in the past few years, and part of that is because we're starting to see students coming in on other instruments.
You know, because of what I do at the Counseling Center and the population that I work with, mainly 18 to 24-year-olds. Tell me a little bit about how, in your experience, working with adolescents or young adults, how can music therapy benefit that age group who, let's say, has depression or has stress issues or even anger issues?
Sure. So when I've worked with children and adolescents with those sorts of mental health needs, I've done a lot of things like using lyric analysis, using preferred music to explore some of the lyrics.
I could see how that would be. They would love that.
Yes, it is a favorite activity. Mm-hmm. It's a favorite activity for some of our adult clients as well. We do a lot of song rewrite. So sometimes we'll take out specific words in a song after doing a lyric analysis and have the clients express themselves in some way. We can teach clients to engage in relaxation techniques using music, mm-hmm. and we do that with a lot of our clients, and we have our students who are out in the field teach a lot of the clients that they're working with some mental health needs on how they can use music to help guide and lead relaxation that they can use on their own time. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to use music in those ways to express emotions, to relax, to analyze feelings, to analyze sort of what's a good choice after this, uh-huh. all of those things that we would do, I think, a lot of times that you probably do in a counseling session,
but
we use music to sort of tap into that as well.
So what does typical music therapy session look like?
It varies. Music therapists work.
I guess it depends on.
It depends on who
where
you're with.
You are.
And where, yes.
Yeah.
It depends
you're in
on.
School versus you mentioned taking some students to Brewerport.
Yes.
I want to talk about that a little bit. But yeah, I guess it depends on where you are.
It does. But generally what we do is we start off with a greeting song of some sort in a school. That may be a hello, getting some appropriate social skills in there, looking at each other and saying, how are you? In some of our other settings, it may be an icebreaker situation. We may do something where we're just sort of checking in on our group if we're working with a group. And then we start to then structure music activities to address, or music interventions, if you will, to address whatever the client needs are. So if we need to do something that is addressing academic skills in a school setting, then we may move into an activity addressing academic skills. If we're working in an inpatient psych setting, we may start off with a lyric analysis. We may start off with a movement activity to get everyone sort of up and moving, especially if they've been sitting for a long time, which is common in some of the inpatient facilities where we work. And then we sort of go sort of one after another through the session. We try to leave everyone in a school setting. We try not to leave the children too hyped up before
oh
we
gosh,
give them back
yes.
to a teacher. So yeah. We're not going to do freeze dance before we leave. We'll do something nice and calm, like a book or calm sign language sing-along sort of a thing. We may end with relaxation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we have students out at the hospital, the nurses will say, can you put Mr. So-and-so to sleep? He really needs to sleep today. He's been bothering us. And so
we're not hypnotherapists. Okay?
And so sometimes we'll play some quiet music and we can actually sometimes get people to sleep. So we usually end with some sort of exit closing.
Yeah.
Closing either song or activity. But if someone is asleep, we just quietly leave.
I need that every day at work anyway, right? Before I leave, to kind of calm down. I just think I don't think people who everybody listens to music.
Right? Yes.
Just about, okay? But I don't think people really are taking it all in how it is affecting you mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be driving into work and hear a song that's sad, and it really does kind of bring me down before my work day. You know, and I've had to catch that and think to myself, oh, I don't need to be listening to this right now, you know?
I know,
or
yeah.
Vice versa. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. And Ellery, I want to ask you a little bit about, you already talked about this with me before the show started, but what do you do with a student who does not react well to their own clients? Okay, so we'll be back. We're talking about music therapy and how music therapy is beneficial to help people who have a mental illness and mental health issues. You're listening to Brain Matters. I'm BJ Gunther. We'll be right back on 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm Paul Feinbaum, my favorite station in the world, 90.7, The Capstone.
Tuscaloosa weather is brought to you by WVUA-TV. You can catch the latest forecasts on WVUA News now in high definition on weekdays at 4, 5, 6, and 10 o'clock, and every weekend at 10 p.m.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about two different mediums, and that's what I call it, to use or to utilize when you have something that is mental health related, be it stress management issues, anger management, depression. I'm trying to think of the things that we most commonly see at the counseling center that music therapy could be utilized for. Our second segment, we're going to talk about art therapy, and I'll explain more about that at the half hour. But Dr. Ellery Draper is from the music therapy department here on campus. She's an assistant professor, and she's our guest tonight. And we've been talking about that program and music therapy in general. And when we were going to break, I wanted to ask you, Ellery, you know, I'm curious as to how students react when they get a negative reaction from a client. Let's say somebody who has Alzheimer's or somebody who just doesn't want to participate. You know, they might not have a diagnosis, so to speak.
Well, how our program is set up is we get students out in the field very early. And so they're out to observe from a very early part, pretty much as soon as they get to campus, as soon as they're in my intro to music therapy class. And so one of the nice benefits of that is that our students are able to see the variety of reactions that clients have and then how a therapist responds, whether it's one of our professional therapists in the field that they're working with, or whether or not it's one of our junior or senior students that they're out with who have a little bit more experience in the field. So we're able to sort of prepare them for that. They're able to see it ahead of time. And then we role play a lot in classes. They're getting ready for clinicals and we're very good at it. We have students who remind us, you are some of the best pre-K kids around, or you are some of the best inpatient mental health clients around. And so I was role playing a pre-K student for one of our students last week, and my favorite color was pink, and gosh darn it, I wanted that pink shaker, and he was trying to get me to identify yellow, and I just wouldn't do it, which is exactly what a preschooler would do. So we try to prepare them and give them lots of opportunities before they're out with clients. So
hopefully that doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Or if it does, they're prepared.
They're prepared for it.
As best as you can be. I mean, if somebody's being ugly. You know, as I mentioned, I like to do research before my shows, and I was reading an article from Psychology Today called Music Therapy for Health and Wellness. And let me read you an excerpt and let you comment. Music is often linked to mood. I mentioned that just a minute ago. A certain song can make us feel happy, sad, energetic, or relaxed. Because music can have such an impact on a person's mindset and well-being, it should come as no surprise that music therapy has been studied for use in managing numerous medical conditions. All forms of music may have therapeutic effects, although music from one's own culture may be most effective. In Chinese medical theory, the five internal organ and meridian systems are believed to have corresponding musical tones, which are used to encourage healing. So let me ask you about that. How you mentioned during the break that students have the option, or no, it's required that they do an internship, but they can go anywhere in the country and it's for 6 months. So what if a student chooses to work in an area that is not of their own culture, that is different from their own? How are they taught about that culture? How are they taught how to use music? I'm thinking of, because I'm obsessed with India right now, Bollywood. Okay, I know. And she's making a face at me right now. I'm kidding. And so how would you know, I've never been to India. I don't really know a whole lot other than what I've seen on videos and stuff. How would you teach somebody like me to practice that in an Indian culture?
So one of the things that we know about music therapy in general is that we know that preferred music is always the most effective.
Yes.
And so with our students, we are teaching them to identify clients' preferred music, and our students are required to maintain a heavy repertoire of popular music. My colleague and I lovingly joke that our music theory and music history colleagues teach our students about very traditional music, and then we corrupt them with popular music because we are the ones playing Jolene down the hall in the middle of the music building.
The Dolly Parton version,
while someone else is practicing a string quartet. And so our students, while they are using their classical music training in the studio, they are also learning popular music chops along the way. And we're teaching them not only what they are likely to encounter in clinical settings here in town, but also in their internship. And then we're also giving them resources to know, hey, I do have a client from India. Where are some sources I can go? What are the characteristics of this music that I can pick up on and use with clients?
Are there, because I'm so afraid the time always slips by, and before you know it, it's time for you to leave. So I wanted to ask, are there any other campus or community resources for music therapists?
Not at this time. No, unless students happen to be in one of the facilities where we are serving clients, there are not music therapy services available to college students on our campus at this time. And there's very few resources for music therapy services in our community at this time. We're out in the community with students providing a lot of services. There are a few professional music therapists in town, but we are primarily supervising our students.
Why do you think that there's not as many resources for college students?
You know, I think music therapy for a long time has been used with the sickest of the sick of the sick.
Yeah.
And we started working with clients and institutions. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the history of music therapy. Mm-hmm. And even in schools now, music therapists are often called in to work with students with multiple severe disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so this wellness model in terms of music therapy is still developing, just like it is in our medical field right now in general and counseling.
Yes,
so I think we need to continue to figure out how we can best serve and best prevent and teach students to access music in a therapeutic way, even if it's not with a music therapist.
Since we have you here and we don't really have any resources for college students, we've got to make do with what we have, right? So do you have any advice, especially since it's midterms right now? We've had a lot of walk-in crisis in the last week and 2 days.
Yes.
So is there any advice that you can give the listeners to, to help with their stressful lives that a music therapist could, if you can give advice like that to a college student?
Sure. Definitely have a playlist of music that calms you down and relaxes you. Getting that playlist, sometimes it helps to have a set playlist at night when you're winding down, getting ready for bed. I have my morning playlist. I have a playlist that I use in my office when it's time for me to get some work and grading done. So having that set playlist can be helpful. A lot of our students talk about finding an exercise class at the rec center that has their preferred music as the soundtrack to get them to the rec to exercise. And so we have students who say, I love going to Zumba class because of the music, or I love, this boot camp class. Boot camp isn't my favorite thing to go to, but the boot camp instructor has the best music. And so using music to help motivate to get some exercise, which we know helps decrease stress. Mm-hmm. We can have music to help pass time, mm-hmm. if you will. So sometimes it's helpful to have a playlist going while you're walking across campus, mm-hmm. Just to help sort of unwind and reset between classes.
And I think most of the students I see always have like ear pods or earphones, on. Who knows what they're listening to? But are there any forms of music that you would not recommend? I mean, that is kind of putting you on the spot, but
What we know from the research is that live preferred music is best.
Live
preferred music is best. And so, and we know that in therapeutic settings, there are many theories on why live music seems to be more effective in therapeutic settings compared to recorded music. Mm-hmm. One of the theories I think is that when you have live music going on, people are reacting to the room. So just like when you go out and see a live concert, you see that person sort of feeding off the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to see some of that happen. But if you think that the loudest rap calms you down, then it probably is.
It probably does.
It probably does. So listen to music that you like. Be open to exploring new music options. There's a lot of music on this campus. There's a lot of music in Tuscaloosa. And so accessing music and being
it's
open
a lot,
to that.
And it's a lot easier, too, now. Tell me, what are the common misconceptions about music therapy?
A lot of times people think that we are just out there having fun,
right,
that we're just banging on the instrument, and we are having fun, and we hope that our clients are having fun as well and enjoying the therapeutic experience. But this isn't something that anyone can just walk in off the streets and do. Our students here complete 180 pre-internship hours on this campus, and then they go out and complete additional hours, so they have a minimum of 1,200 hours before they sit for the music therapist board certification exam.
Mm-hmm.
So our students are extensively trained in how to respond in clinical environments, in crisis situations, to family members in a hospital room, to patients who are experiencing crisis. So.
I got to mention this because I wanted to ask you, you told me, and you didn't mention this when I asked you the question about how do the students react if there's somebody who's aggressive or being ugly or whatever. What did you tell me?
I told them that we teach the students, so this is from my predecessor here who recently retired. She has this thing called the music therapy face.
Yes.
And so we teach students a neutral, positive face that they have on.
I need to start using that in my counseling sessions with students. A counseling therapy face, which would not be pretty right now, this time of the semester. But, okay, let me ask you this. Tell us about your research, because when I was researching you, You know, it's one of the things you've done, and I don't know how many articles you've had published for the Journal of Music Therapy. You can tell us that. But what is your research interest and focus?
My research interest goes back to my beginnings of music therapy and being interested in working with children with disabilities. My undergraduate degree is actually in music education, and I have taught in the classroom. And I sort of live in between and within both worlds of music education and music therapy. But my primary research interest is working with children with disabilities, mm-hmm. and particularly working with children with disabilities in school settings.
Okay.
So I have research with a colleague of mine from when I was working primarily with children with autism, mm-hmm. in an early intervention center, and we used music to work on language skills. And then since then, I've done some research investigating sort of what is out there in terms of research with children with disabilities in inclusive classroom settings. We're starting to see a push to have what's called the push-in model in classrooms. So we're seeing therapies being pushed into a general education setting. So we're starting to see the days of pulling students out for speech therapy is coming to an end. And so I'm interested in how we can facilitate music therapy and music therapists working with general educators in general school settings. And so that's a big research area of mine. When I was living in Texas working on my doctoral degree, I worked with a teacher there with my mentor and advisor from University of Texas. And we had a first grade classroom of general music, and there were children with severe disabilities. And we figured out that the typical kids didn't know how to help the kids with disabilities. So we taught them how to help each other, and we taught them to work together so they wouldn't be scared. And so they weren't doing it for them. We were actually seeing a lot of the kids doing for.
Yeah.
And so we taught the kids, and we're in the middle of that data analysis right now.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, with what you're talking about, if their trend is to is the opposite of what was happening, to push, what did you call it, push in. It just sounds like there's a lot of possibilities for our students who are in this program now. You said, you told me before the show, right now we have 55, is that right, 55 mm-hmm. students who are in the music therapy program?
We have 55 students on campus, and we have additional students who are out working on their clinical internship.
Okay.
So we're growing.
So a lot of interest in this major, but you do have to have the skill. It's different than just the other majors on campus where you can just go sign up. Mm-hmm. You have to audition. To me, that is so much more difficult, not to discount, you know, other majors on campus, but you, because you still have to have certain skills to do those too, and you just find that out, I think, a little bit later sometimes. But you have to know how to play an instrument, and that is what would stop me from majoring in music therapy. Because thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with Jacqueline Myrick. I hope I pronounced her name correctly. And we're going to talk about art therapy in a program that she's helping to facilitate. So you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7. Come back after the break. Then waited all night for the walls to move. I love some girls that I barely knew. I made some friends and I lost some too. Crashed my car, I was 17. My mother in the seat riding next to me. The things I've learned from a broken mirror. How a face can change when a heart knows fear. For all the things my eyes have seen, the best by far is you. If I could fly, then I would know what life looks like from up above. Keep you safe, I keep you dry. Don't be afraid, Cecilia, I'm the satellite, and you're the sky. We'll be right back.
this is Kadesh Flo, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
This is how you make yourself vanish. Red Mountain Entertainment presents Jason Isbell live at the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater with guest performances by Sergio Simpson and Brandi Clark on Thursday, October 15th. Tickets are now on sale via Ticketmaster.com, the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater box office, or by phone at 800-745-3000. WVUA thanks Red Mountain for supporting its programming. This is how you make yourself closer to your brother.
Remember him back when. This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone, and I'm BJ Gunther, and we're talking about different modalities of treatment for mental health issues. Since the show is about college mental and physical health issues, you know, I try to find some interesting topics that college students can use. And so we just got through talking about music therapy. It's fascinating. I think people, you know, when they first hear about music therapy, they think, oh, that's just listening to music. But I did not realize there's so much more involved than just listening to music. I mean, there's a lot of preparation, years of preparation go into actually being a music therapist. But we're going to talk this second half about art therapy, which is similar in the sense that it is not a traditional medium necessarily used. I say that it's not something that we, you know, traditionally use even at the counseling center. I have used art therapy before with children. I'm not an art therapist myself, but you know, there is plenty of research to back up the fact that when people are able, especially children, are able to express themselves through art, through painting, through coloring, sometimes we can kind of get into their head a little bit more, for the lack of a better term. And with college students, like I said, I don't know if I've ever actually used art therapy. I'm sure there's some use for it, usually because we see students at the counseling center for such a short period of time that it's just something we really hadn't thought about. But tonight, my second guest is Jacqueline Myrick. Now, Jacqueline, tell us a little bit. You're a UA student, but you're also doing a lot of other stuff. And the reason I invited you on the program is I read an article, I think, in the CW. Was it in the CW? Yeah, in the CW back in 2014 that mentioned you as a facilitator for a program called Art to Life. Is that the name of the program? Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. And like you said, my name is Jacqueline Myrick, and a little bit about myself. I'm a senior here at UA. I'm majoring in psychology, minoring in biology on a pre-med track. So art therapy was something that was right up my alley, something that piqued my interest early on. And I was fortunate enough, through staying involved in the Honors College at the university, to hear about this program called Art to Life. So it was relatively new when I started in the program, but I was able to come in not only as a student, but then later as a student facilitator, which is how you read about me in that article that you saw, and learn about different forms of art therapy, particularly with Alzheimer's patients. And that's where I come in, to connect students with our course director, who is a local neurologist from town, Dr. Daniel Potts, as well as an art therapist, to bring art therapy to Alzheimer's participants at Caring Days.
So when you, and that is mentioned in the article, and the article's titled Class Teaches Mental Benefits of Art Therapy, in case you're interested in Googling it. So when you're a senior in psychology, biology, pre-med tract, so you're basically a genius. So how did you even learn? Did you help create this program, or was it already established when you got involved?
I was able to enter the program in its second year here at the university. So it was already established and founded, and it was created based off of an idea that Dr. Daniel Potts had. His father was a patient at Caring Days Adult Daycare, and he had Alzheimer's and dementia diseases. He was a patient with art therapy that was introduced to him, and he became this incredible artist. So through that experience, Dr. Potts was able to speak with one of the deans of the Honors College, Dr. Jacqueline Morgan, mm-hmm. and created Art to Life. Now, I came in as a student my sophomore year, and that just happened to be an outgoing year for the current student facilitator. So when I was able to come in, I was able to come into a program that was already established, but that was growing. So now we went from a one-semester class to a year-long course with students constantly on our waiting list, and we're brainstorming ways to expand the course and to bring it to areas outside of just Tuscaloosa and Caring Days.
Okay, so do you have to have a certain major or requirement to participate in Art to Life? Do you have to be in the Honors College, or can you, anybody who's listening and wants to, I guess, apply, would you have to apply to be one of the student facilitators, and how many will you take?
Those are all great questions. We do have a couple requirements for the course. Because it is a seminar and service learning course, we can only take up to 15 students. That is not only for the sake of keeping it small and intimate, but also so we don't overwhelm our participants who are in the course with Alzheimer's. So we ask those participants, those student participants, to do an interview process and an application process, and they are required to be in the Honors College. We welcome anyone from any major, whether that is dance, journalism, telecommunications, if it is biology, psychology, whatever your interest may be. If you have a connection and an interest in art therapy, we invite you to apply and be a part of the course.
I know you're a psychology major, so to me it kind of makes sense that this would be a medium that you could use maybe in the future. I don't know what you're planning on doing in medical school, but we can talk about that in a minute. But let's say, as with music therapy, it's a requirement to play an instrument. Is it a requirement to know how to draw? Are you an artist?
I am not personally an artist, so there is no requirement that you have to do art in any traditional sense of the word. One of the amazing things about art therapy is it is largely about the process, and in the process of creating something through the creative method, whether you are using paint or if you are drawing, charcoal, oil pastels, markers, pencils, or if you are using Play-Doh or clay, or one of the art therapy techniques we used involved shaving cream with a participant who was blind. So that whatever medium you may be using, it's all about the process of getting to a final piece and not necessarily creating what you think a traditional art piece should be. My mom is a high school art teacher and a wonderful artist. So that is where art has always been something that I've grown up with, has been something I've appreciated. And also my grandfather was diagnosed with dementia before he passed away. Mm-hmm. So because of those connections in my own life, I knew art therapy through Art to Life was something that I immediately wanted to be involved in when I heard about it on campus, and I've been fortunate enough to continue to be involved in it in my 4 years here.
Do you go once a week? How often do you go and participate? And is it just with Caring Days? Have you just participated with Alzheimer's patients? Are you and the program thinking of venturing out and doing more with children? Even on this campus, I can think of a program. I don't know if they have an art therapy program. They may, but it's the ACTS program, which is for the autistic college students who are, enrolled as a UA student, but they also have some sort of pervasive developmental disorder diagnosis. Are y'all thinking about venturing out with that? And I just have bombarded you with a ton of questions. I realize.
No, I love it. I welcome the questions. I'm happy to take them. We are looking at expanding the program. So not only do we want to expand it in Tuscaloosa, but we also want to expand it outside of the city and into other institutions that are not just an adult daycare facility or are not just a university. So one of the ways that we're doing that is we're looking at compiling a manual, and we're also looking at compiling documentaries. So we've started taking videos, we've started interviewing students, and we're also currently undergoing research in conjunction with the psychology department at the University of Alabama to get some hard empirical evidence about the benefits of what we're doing with Art to Life. So we are looking to expand the program, and I believe the program you may be referring to is called Arts and Autism, and that is a program here in Tuscaloosa that anyone can volunteer with and be involved with if they so choose.
What about, and I'm writing down notes, let's take a break right now, because I'm sure what I have to say is going to take way more than 2 minutes. When we come back, I want to talk about a trend that I am seeing now with adults. And I have to be careful how I say this, but it's adult coloring books. I don't need to say it like that because then it turns into a triple X show. So I'm going to say coloring books for adults. Okay. So when we come back, we're going to talk some more about the Art to Life program. We're with Jacqueline Myrick. I have a hard time saying that. And you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7, The Capstone.
You've only lost the night. Preset all your pretty feelings. May they comfort you tonight. And I'm climbing over something. And I'm running through these walls. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I believe. I don't even know if I believe everything you're trying to say to me.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7, The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters. We're on 90.7, The Capstone, and you know that, or you wouldn't be listening. You can listen to us live online, or you can listen at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. There's a lot of dots in there. And we're talking tonight about different mediums, not the medium that talks to dead people, different modalities to treat mental health issues. And I'm talking about stuff like depression, stress management, anger management. We're talking right now with a student. She's a senior major in psychology here at UA. Her name's Jacqueline Myrick, and she is instrumental in a program. She's a facilitator. That's your actual role in this program, called Art to Life. And right now she's talking about really the program, the Caring Days, which is an Alzheimer's program, and how much art therapy is benefiting those patients. But can you tell us a little bit about how you could see art therapy benefiting college students? You know, before we went to break, I talked about coloring books for adults. I'm going to admit it, I bought one in Seaside, Florida, because I just get caught up in the trend, and I collect Sharpies because I'm a psycho like that. I love Sharpies. And so it's really relaxing sometimes during the day when I've got a little bit of time, or I just want to kind of let my mind drift a little bit. It's really kind of fun to color, you know, in my adult coloring book. That sounds so obscene. But can you comment a little bit about how college students could utilize art therapy on a day-to-day basis? And maybe I'm asking you something you can't answer. But
no, I'm happy to answer that. One of the things that we have seen with our students who are participating in the program is that art therapy, even though they are not the ones directly doing the art, that they are benefiting from just the interaction. And so whether that is because they are assisting their participant who has Alzheimer's with whatever the task may be with art, or if it's because they went home and practiced the same art therapy with themselves, we're seeing that they are also increasing in this positive affect, that they are coming to class and are able to set aside all of the stress and worry and anxiety of their day and focus fully on just giving back to another person. So I think that same concept can be implemented in a day-to-day life with a college student. And I think the purpose behind art therapy and what we're doing is being able to take a time and a moment to just have for yourself and to then give to another person. And that's what we do with art therapy. But whether that is for you an exercise class, whether that is doodling on the side of your notes, whether that is drawing or coloring, whether that is actually taking a couple hours out of your course schedule and taking a class like Intro to Art or like Intro to Photography that the university offers, just to have an outlet to be creative and to do something that maybe you never thought you were capable of. But I very much believe creativity is a muscle that you can exercise and you can work. And I think that surprise that students have, they end up realizing that they can do so much more than they originally thought themselves capable if they just try. So I would suggest, whether it's doodling or finding another outlet, just doing something for you. Or a coloring book, exactly.
And I think it helps with self-confidence, too, and self-esteem. When you get complimented on your artwork, or you get just comments on your artwork. You know, I should have asked you this in the beginning. Do we have an art therapy major here on campus?
Do you know?
We do not at the University of Alabama. Art therapy is something that is prevalent in graduate programs, but it is not as prevalent in undergraduate programs. So that is something that other universities may have begun at their campuses, but at least at the University of Alabama right now, it is not offered. But hopefully we could see that change in the next couple of years.
I'm a little bit surprised. What about other institutions? Do you know if other institutions have implemented a program like Art to Life across campus? I mean, across the United States, even in the state, you may be aware of some in the state, but what about across, you know, the nation?
There's actually only one other program that is similar to Art to Life in any fashion that we know of. Yes, ma'am, that we know of. And that program is at a university in Ohio, from what I understand, and I might have to fact check that, but from what I understand, speaking with Dr. Potts and having done research through the psychology department on Art to Life, that program is in Ohio. And it is similar to Art to Life, but we are the only one that truly takes students with a licensed art therapist and a neurologist into a community that needs art therapy or that could benefit from art therapy, such as the Alzheimer's and dementia patients that we're working with.
And this may be going way too far, but how do you measure? You may not be there yet, but how do you measure whether or not it's working? I mean, I know you can, maybe it's just by visual. You know, you can visually see that, you know, you said Dr. Potts's dad is a patient in the program and or was a patient in the program, maybe he still is, and that he is a wonderful artist. But how can you tell that it's really benefiting somebody?
Many times for us, it's from the testimonies of the caregivers rather than even the participants themselves. So this program goes far beyond just the students and the participants, but also to the family members. Because when our participants with Alzheimer's leave after a Friday art therapy session, because the students go once a week during the semester on Fridays, two caring days, to implement art therapy with our participants, they leave seeing that their mood has improved. They hear from caregivers the next week who they're in contact with, gathering life story details, because part of the student's task and project for the semester is to not only assist in art therapy, but take the art that's been created and compile a life story memoir for the participant. Mm-hmm. And so that is a way of us validating them. So at the end of every session, the students look at the art therapy and validate the participant and what they created, whether it was finished, unfinished, whether a participant likes it or not. It is something that we want to validate them for doing and for trying. And because of that, we hear testimonies from those participants and their families about how much better the participant seems.
Or maybe calmer.
Yes, ma'am.
Calmer. You know, with Alzheimer's patients, sometimes they can be aggressive. And I'm going to ask you the same thing I ask Ellery Draper about, how do you prepare? Do you prepare students in your meetings with students? Because you said you meet with students before they actually go to the setting. How do you prepare students to handle somebody who's aggressive? And I know there's staff members there at Caring Days that that's their job. That's what they do. They're trained to do that. But to not really react if somebody doesn't want to do what the student is proposing.
Because they are just students and they aren't trained in art therapy, what we do ask them to do is to defer more to the
staff
that is there, as well as to Dr. Potts and our art therapist who is present in the room. But one of the things that they have seen more than aggression is they've seen a lot of negative emotions come out. But that, in our opinion, is one of the positives of art therapy. We can see a lot of reconciliation of relationships that may be ongoing or maybe ended a long time ago because they were able to tap back into that emotional place where they were through the process of creating and doing their art. So what we tell students to do is to not be afraid to ask questions, maybe about a spouse that is no longer around, or maybe about a circumstance that was hard, or about a subject that may be touchy, but then to let the emotion happen. And if it becomes something that they can't handle anymore, to defer to us, because we are always in the room present with them.
Are there different approaches to art therapy? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am. One of the approaches that we use specifically is we begin with mindfulness training. Okay. So with our art therapy, we want to emphasize the fact that we want not only the Alzheimer's participants, but our students and our art therapist, myself as a facilitator, everyone who is a part of the program, to be fully in the moment. So that means whatever emotion they are feeling, we want to validate the participant as they are. We don't want to ask them to change or to become anything or to put any restrictions on themselves or their creative process. We want them to be fully aware of how they are feeling, what they are doing, and to be present in that moment with us. Other art therapies may use different techniques in engaging or greeting their participants in order to start. We have a group therapy session. Other artists may use an individual session. And depending on your art therapist, and because it's art, the nature of it is going to be deferred back to the personality of the art therapist and what their personal style is in creating, whether it's more abstract or concrete, whether you're working with children or with adults, to simplify or complicate the process as necessary.
You've done this. This is your second year, and you sound very professional. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your plans for the future? You want to go to medical school? Do you know what you want to practice, or what kind of medicine, or how you could utilize your learning in the Art to Life program here with your medical practice?
Yes, that is something that I'm still trying to work out the details of, because I know that art therapy has been so influential in my life that it's not something that I want to end now. But one of the biggest things that we teach our students that I have begun to implement is we have coined the term culture of compassion. And so we want compassion to be something that we don't just talk about, and it's not just a feeling, but something that is a feeling deep enough and strong enough to move us to action. And our action right now is to meet these participants where they are and to bring them art therapy and validate who they are right now, that this disease has not taken anything from them as a person, and that they are still valuable to society as they are. So I think as a doctor one day, hopefully I will be going to medical school somewhere in the state of Alabama, and hopefully I will be a pediatrician, but I would also love to go into some form of a family practice or family medicine as well. But in that practice, whether I'm doing some form of art therapy or it's just bringing the culture of compassion that I've learned and practice now into that practice one day as a physician, that's what I hope to do.
It's refreshing to hear somebody say that, that's going into medicine, you know. And with your background, with your mom being an art teacher, I can't ever see you not utilizing some form of art therapy in something that you're doing, whether it's volunteer or your practice. Thank you for being on the show, Jacqueline. I appreciate it. And I'm going to make a few announcements before we close the show. And don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website. We've had some problems with recording our shows this semester, but we're going to try to, hopefully this show's been recorded because it's been another great show. And if you want to listen to some of our past shows, go to counseling.ua.edu and you can listen to those shows. Just click on the Brain Matters icon on the homepage. It'll take you straight to the shows. And also, some of our shows are actually on audioboom.com. Just type in WVUA FM and then find our show, the title Brain Matters, and our logo. I always like to thank people who have made this show possible. So let me thank a few people, especially Dr. Lee Keyes. He's our executive director at the Counseling Center. Terry Siggers, the Office of Student Media. My production assistants, Jordan Williams, Dorothy Beck, and Natalie Beck. And my colleagues at the Counseling Center. Of course, the WVUA staff. And my guest tonight, Dr. Ellery Draper and Jacqueline Myrick. We'll return next Tuesday, and the entire show will be dedicated to discussing plans for Student Affairs has for the future, especially initiatives with wellness. And our guest for the whole hour will be Dr. David Grady. He's the Vice President of Student Affairs, so that should be interesting. Geek Life is next, and thanks so much for listening. I'm Dr.